I got my ring light on.
You recording, Cash?
I am.
All right.
If this is going to be that kind of party, I'm going to stick my dick in the mashed potato. Neither. Out here, just a little bit. Ooh, street, but
get off the cross, dude. Hang them out with your friends.
Construct ground for you.
Valediction.
I don't understand. It's just fun.
In defense of Coldplay.
It's fine.
Oh, top of the top to ya. This is Jonah Ray. Dio can't make it because he's fucking dead, but Cash Hartzell is here. Cash, say hello.
Hi, everybody. I'm not Dio.
Neil is here also. Neil, not Dio?
No, he's not. He's clapping.
Is that
he's
silent clapping?
Yeah.
Were you pulling back claps?
Are you muted?
Am I muted? I don't know.
No,
oh, you know what? It's because clapping. It's, you know why? Because Zoom knows how irritating that would be to hear someone clapping into a microphone. So by God's good grace of the Zoom, we didn't have to hear it. Our guest today, very excited about this. One of my favorite comedians. His name is James Acaster. James,
yay!
Hello.
I always have to be clear.
I always have to be worried. I'm always going... A caster. I don't know why I want to complicate.
No one's ever sure. It is just the simplest way of pronouncing it, but I've had some people insert an N and say Amcaster, so, you know, you're not in that group.
Yeah, good. I don't want to be grouped into anything.
Yeah.
We're very excited to have you on. If no one's seen your three specials on Netflix, do that now. Stop listening to this and watch that now, because it's way more entertainment. Mm-hmm. Than what you're about to get into here. But also, you have a podcast. You have a couple podcasts. You have one with Ed Gamble, Off Menu podcast, which some of our friends have been on, like Anthony Jeselnik and Emily Gordon.
Ooh. Yes.
Those are good guests.
And then also...
Talk about food?
And then that's your food podcast. But we're not here to talk about food. You're probably sick of talking about food.
Yeah.
We're here to talk about your BBC podcast, about your obsession with the year 2016 and the music that came out. Can you tell us about this podcast?
Yeah. In 2017, I had a breakdown, and I dealt with that breakdown by buying as much music from 2016 as I possibly could. I now own over 600, approaching 700 albums from 2016, and I'm convinced it's the greatest year for music of all time. So every week, I send a different guest an album from 2016, they come on and we talk about that album. I'll see if I can convince them, just based on that album alone, that 2016 is the greatest year for music of all time. And I love it so much.
And it's, how did that even start? Like the idea of just, you wanted to revert. So 2016 for you, way better year than 2017 because of the breakdown.
You know, weirdly, it's like in 2016, for years, I had not listened to any current music because I was in a band before I started doing stand-up in 2008. When I started doing stand-up, I was like saying goodbye to being a drummer ever. And I just think I just stopped. It wasn't a conscious thing, but I just stopped listening to current music and just got completely out of the loop with it. And in 2016, I remember Black Star coming out in January, and then Lemonade came out later in the year, and then Blonde came out later in the year. And I think when Blonde came out, I was like, these are three like really big albums that everyone's been talking about. And maybe I've like written off current music. Maybe there still is innovative and exciting stuff going on in the mainstream. And I'll look into it a little bit more. And so by the end of 2016, I'd had half a year of like buying loads of individual tracks and really getting into how much was out there and how much exciting stuff there was in every genre. And then when I had a breakup in early 2017, in January, I instantly just started doing the thing that had recently brought me the most joy and comfort. And that was going down the lists of best albums of 2016. And there's so much to find on the internet that, and because the year 2017 didn't get any better, I got dropped by my agent. I had my therapist start to kind of like semi-stalk me. A lot of bad stuff happened that year. And every time, and also I was on a tour, you know, you mentioned the Netflix specials. I was touring all year, relearning those shows. And so I was constantly touring shows that I thought, oh, actually, I don't know these shows as well anymore, and I'm not in a good headspace. And every night I felt like the shows were bad, and I knew I was going to film them and release them to the world. I was like, oh great, now you're going to release multiple bad specials, you fucking idiot. So I hated. I felt exhausted. So every night before I went to bed, I would just Google, you know, a variation of best albums of 2016 to find different lists. And if I found a good one before I went to bed and had bought it, I felt like I'd achieved something that day. And the project has evolved over the years, and I do it for different reasons now that aren't comforting. Sometimes it's become work, and I was writing the book, and when I'm doing the podcast, I don't want to miss any good ones, because, you know, you can't be like, I know the most about all the music in 2016, and then you've missed an absolute, you know, humdinger. So yeah. I keep on still researching it and trying to find stuff. But and with each passing year, it becomes different because albums grow on you differently. Mm-hmm. You know, I've only just realized how good an album Blank Face by Schoolboy Q is. I've mm-hmm. had it for a while now, and only just this month I've been like, and which basically this week I've got gone, oh, I fucking love this album, it's brilliant, and I've got another new favorite to add to the pile. So yeah, it keeps on, it's a project that keeps on adopting different kind of faces and different purposes in my life as well.
I love the idea of, because we've all struggled with it, and we've all seen it, is just like the expert in music, especially the sort of the record store expert, the guy that works behind the counter and supposedly knows everything about it, can buy old stuff because he's like, oh yeah, this will sell, or this is good, or something like that. But it always seems impossible because there's so much to keep up with. And I like how you've taken it and put it into an achievable thing where it's just like, I'm only going to learn these 365 days. There's only so much that can come out there. So I want to know all of it. So that's really interesting as like an achievable step to becoming that music guy, that overwhelming music guy.
Yeah, there was a point where I was just like, oh, no one's done this before, so I'll just do this. Because like, you know, it's like, there are people who like, you know, profess that certain years are a great year for music and have written books about those years, but they haven't gone out of their way to buy as many albums as they possibly can from that year. They've just gone, oh, loads of big influential albums were out that year, I'll write about those. And I've just gone, well, no one has gone so all in on one year. And you probably couldn't do it pre-2010. It's like the music industry, music in general, is so saturated now, oversaturated, that you can just find, like, anyone could pick any year since 2010 and find at least 50 of their all-time favorite albums in that year, because so much stuff is being released, but you just have to put the hours in.
Yeah, well, it's got to be a healthier way to handle a breakdown than, you know, diving into, I don't know, Neil, what did you do? Knives? That was, Neil tried to collect every knife available
knives,
to him.
Knives, you know, firearms.
Yeah, put that away.
Yes, I like how Neil just like made, like, just gave James quite the American podcast experience here. I'm not sure if you are familiar with that, James, but every podcaster has a gun on them just in case they need to shoot their computer.
Yeah,
yeah, man. I appreciate it. You know, thanks for welcoming me into your country.
Well, we're gonna keep on talking with James Acaster, but we're also going to be playing. I picked up music. All the music that we're playing on this episode is music that we've played before from the year 2016, so it's going to be kind of a look back on some of that stuff. And when we come back, more James and also more news in regards to music. That's a segment that we do here, James, and I hope you enjoy it. Anyway, here is... one of my favorite bands and one of my favorite records from the year was the band from Glasgow named Paws, P-A-W-S. This is off their album No Grace. This is the titular track, No Grace. We'll be right back with more radio.
Everything. Jonah Radio.
Hooray! That was Pause with No Grace. Now, had you heard that one yet, James?
No! This is what I love about the Pulp Project. I'm always discovering new stuff. I liked that. I liked the energy, and I liked the heavy, thick production on that.
Yes, produced by Blink-182's Mark Hoppus at his studio home studio in somewhere... in the north of London. I can't remember which town exactly. But yeah, great guys, great band. And I was going to ask you, have you been able to keep up with music, with the enormity of trying to keep up with a world's worth of music from one year, especially because you have access to all of it? Sometimes I go down rabbit holes where I'll just put in like African funk, or Indonesian ska. You know, you can put in these things and you can kind of go down these crazy rabbit holes because someone's got made a playlist from their one scene.
Have you found much Indonesian ska?
There's a ton. There's a ton.
Oh shit.
Yeah, there's a ton of great Indonesian punk and ska. And
I listened to an episode yesterday of James's podcast that was about Malawian hip hop. I believe was
yes,
what it was.
Yes.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Yeah. Sounding.
But have you been able to keep up?
Yeah, I have. So until 2016, I wasn't buying anything from current years. I wasn't really bothering. Since this whole project, I'd say I now own more music from 2017, 18, 19, and 20. Than I do from any previous year, pre-2016. Like, I own a lot. I think this year, probably already bought over, 50 albums or something that have come out this year. It kind of completely reignited my obsession with just current music. And because the 2016 thing as well just sent me down a load of rabbit holes with certain bands, certain genres, and they're all still releasing stuff now. And I'm just really keen to see what they all do next.
And you're buying these. That's another thing. Is that important to you to buy the music?
I think it is. Yes, it is. I don't stream. I'm not on any streaming services and whatever. I'm fortunate that I can afford to buy albums, and so I'm just taking advantage of that and doing it. And it's it's all still MP3s and stuff. When I really love stuff, I buy it on vinyl. I have so that's exciting when you realize you love an album and they're like, right, I'm officially going to buy a physical copy of it now.
Yes, as opposed to having a bunch of records of I liked it when it came out, but it didn't really, and now it's just taking up space.
That's a really good way of looking at vinyl collecting now, is it makes the physical space. It's willing, you're not just going to stream it, or you're not just going to listen to MP3s, you're going to bump it up too. I can hold this in my hand.
Yeah, this is going to take up some space in my home.
Yeah, just making that leap of going, okay, I like this enough now that I'm prepared to one day argue over it.
I don't know. The last time I put it on. Because right around when I turned 30, I had disposable income and I was not feeling good about things. And I just started buying records. And it was a lot of punk and hardcore and noise records from that I loved when I was in high school, and it would just be oh yeah, and then I remember this. I remember this record, and those aren't really records that I want to put around the house. Put on when I'm trying to relax with some coffee, and I put on Spaz's La Revancha, and
Oh, believe me, I have 12 copies of The Sound of Music that my grandfather used to buy every year when he went on vacation to the Sound of Music Hotel in Vermont. And so I got those, and I got, I think, a half dozen Jane Fonda workout records.
always need a funny gift. It's always a good funny gift, a novelty record.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for the next time I leave my home.
James, this is the time in the show where we do a segment that Cash likes to scream at called
Music News.
That's right, it's time for Music News, where we play some Thin Lizzy and then I look at websites like Spin, Rolling Stone, NME, Metal Injection, and more, and Stereo Gum. I'm giving away all of my sources. Giving away all of my sources. All right, it's time for Music News. So, biggest news, I think, this week is the death of Van Halen guitarist Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah.
Pasadena boy.
Pasadena legend.
Pasadena legend, Eddie Van Halen.
Titular Van Halen, Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah, that was a weird thing when I was a kid, and I was like, wait, the singer's name isn't Van Halen? It's the it's the guy with the drill?
No, it's the drummer. It's Alex Van Halen.
Oh, and then he invited his brother in?
Yeah. Well,
now it's Wolfgang, too, right? He was on bass for a while.
Yeah, he replaced, what's his nuts?
But I think probably, it's like, you know, great guitar player, but Eddie was interviewed in 2012 by CNN, and Metal Injection talks about this, where he was in the studio with Quincy Jones and Michael Jackson, and he said this about doing the guitar parts for that album. He says, Michael left to go across the hall to do some children's speaking record. I think it was E.T. or something. So I asked Quincy, what do you want me to do? And he goes, whatever you want to do. And I go, be careful when you say that. If you know anything about me, be careful when you say do anything you want. I listen to the song and immediately go, can I change some parts? And I turn to the engineer and I go, okay, from the breakdown, chop in this part, go to this place, pre-chorus to the chorus out. It took him maybe 10 minutes, put together, and I proceeded to improvise two solos over it and was just finishing the second solo when Michael walked in. And, you know, artists are kind of crazy people. We're all a little strange. I didn't know how he would react to what I was doing. So I warned him before he listened, and I said, look, I changed the middle section of your song. Now, in my mind, he's either going to have his bodyguards kick me out for butchering his song, or he's going to like it. And so he gave it a listen, and he turned to me, and he said, turned to me and went, wow, thank you so much for having the passion not to just come in and blaze a solo, but to actually care about the song and make it better. So that's a very nice little story.
Wow.
He just comes in to Quincy Jones and Michael Jackson and goes, you know what? It's not working.
Yeah.
I was talking about this, that particular song yesterday, and like, when was the last time there was a pop hit with a fucking guitar solo in the middle of it? Like, I can't think, I don't listen to a lot of pop music, but I don't feel like that was I feel like that was sort of a big watershed at that
point. Is there a solo in Since You've Been Gone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, hold on. Hold on, which version?
What's the Since You've Been Gone?
All right, everybody sing, and then we'll stop when we hit the solo.
Yeah.
So I learned, if it's the song I'm thinking of, my brother on his first ever guitar lesson got taught that solo because it's very easy. And then she taught it to me when he got home, because it's all on one string. And so I think it's the only solo I can still play on the guitar.
The Kelly Clarkson song, right?
Yeah.
Is that what we're talking about?
That is not what I'm thinking.
Okay, what's Since You've Been Gone are you?
I'm thinking of the proper, like, Since You've Been Gone, Since You've Been Gone, that song, that Out of My Head Can't Take It. Do you guys not know this song?
I know that song. But when it comes to Since You've Been Gone, so, you know, I should have clarified, since the letter U, Been Gone. Yeah. That's the version I was talking about.
I know that song. I know the,
It's one of Neil's favorite songs. Neil, is there a guitar solo? Is there a guitar solo in that?
I don't know. I just know that it was like chemically written by these Swedish producers who were like, oh, if we go from this minor key to this major key, like, it'll give people like ASMR tingles, and and they're like, oh yeah, we've cracked the code on pop songs.
Yes, the algorithm will just be making all music from here on out. I'm surprised about the musicians who are getting behind safety protocols of COVID-19 and the ones who are not. The ones who are not anti-maskers, the guys from Stone Roses, Noel Gallagher, anti-masker, you know, Brown Eyed Girl singer, also very, very against it, Van Morrison. And then I'm sometimes surprised with the people who are into it. One of those people, I was surprised by this, Gene Simmons from Kiss. He's urging everyone to wear a goddamn mask.
Really?
Now, this is a guy that once stopped a song at a Kiss show to make everyone do the Pledge of Allegiance.
That's a big switcheroo. I really thought he would be on the anti-mask side of things.
Yeah. I mean, he needs a bigger mask than most people.
That's true, yeah.
Oh, the mask with the tongue.
He's also a huge piece of shit. So,
This is my guess, and I didn't do the research, but my guess is that Kiss is just about to come out with a line of masks. And that's the reason.
For sure.
Yeah. And if you don't wear those masks, it's okay, because they also make Kiss coffins. You could also get a casket, a Kiss brand casket. Yeah, I can't imagine this guy doing anything.
Vinnie Paul from Pantera was buried in a Kiss casket.
Wow. You know,
speaking of Vinnie Paul from Pantera, there's currently a GoFundMe fix up his old 1985 limousine that he used to drive around. I couldn't think of a better thing.
Wait, he drove
it? Yeah, apparently he bought it, and it was like his thing. And now there's these people trying to raise money. I was like, there's other things to raise money for outside of a guy's limousine.
Yeah, a dead guy's limo.
Yowza.
Yeah. Who else do you think would be is a surprising pro masker? John Prine. That was a big. He's a pro mask.
No, but John Prine is very, very progressive.
He's also dead of COVID.
So you were just trying to make a really tasteless joke.
Yeah, it's tasteless. Yeah.
I didn't know he was dead of COVID.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. David Bowie, oddly enough, came back and got it.
Don't worry, John Cash. Lennon. We'll let you finish this riff.
No, good. Yeah, don't interrupt me.
Yeah.
Martin Luther King.
Oh my God. Okay. Moving on. Moving on. So recently we love talking about Tom DeLonge here on Jonah Radio, basically because, not so much because of his music, but because, his fascination in extraterrestrials. Tom DeLonge is going to be directing a science fiction movie.
Really?
Yes.
Does he think it's science fiction? Yeah. Does he call it a science fact movie?
Does he include fiction in that description, or is he just directing a science movie?
Here's a statement from Tom DeLonge. I've been playing. No, sorry, I won't. It's too long to do the whole. I've been playing the story of my dreams for decades. It represents all aspects of my strange existence, including growing up in San Diego suburbia as a disaffected teenage skateboarder. I had a tight tribe of friends who never missed an opportunity to piss people off and made me laugh so hard I would cry. The camaraderie, curiosity, angst, and irreverence is everything that led me to Blink-182, and this story is layered with my obsession with tightly blurred lines between science and science fiction.
So okay. Making rude E.T., basically, it sounds like.
If E.T. was, one of the E.T. ripoffs was just like E.T. Got really into skateboarding.
Yeah. E.T. can jam on that bass. His fingers light up.
How are we going to play the show without everyone noticing he's an alien? I got an idea. And then he dresses up like Eddie Van Halen. He dresses up like a guy from Kiss.
It's mad. It's absolutely crazy that you could be a person in this day and age and think that you growing up in the suburbs of San Diego and being a skater is like, that's the story everyone needs to hear right now. Oh, you're not gonna believe the life I had, everybody.
Yeah. So there I was, a white kid in a white community, just trying to make my way. But because my hair, my bangs were swooped to the side, the guys didn't like me.
Yeah. I was friends with the bullies.
Yeah.
I gathered from that.
Yeah. He's going to just basically have a story essentially about how he was friends with bullies and then went on to be in a band that all the bullies across the world would love.
This is bully music.
Story that's been told 1,000 times.
But more DeLonge news. We got some clips recently on a baking show. Someone showed their fascination with it. I'm going to share.
A regular segment?
Yes. Well, you know what? You'd be surprised how often DeLonge comes up in the news. Because
have you got a name for the segment yet?
DeLonge for the memories? I don't know. No.
DeLonge and Winding Road.
DeLonge and
I was going to say DeLonge story short.
DeLonge story short.
Also there you good. Go. There it is. Just laying there.
It's just laying there. I'll happily pick up anything that's later.
All right, but this is here I'm going to share this with you guys. Here's a guy.
Oh no!
On a British baking show, made this terrible looking. Now, if you didn't know that was Tom DeLonge looking at this thing, this three flavors of Tom DeLonge cake we're seeing. What would you think it is?
Fat Mike.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, Fat Mike a little bit there. Maybe the son from The Sopranos.
AJ? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's a good
one. If the
one.
Shirt continued, it would be a Slipknot shirt or whatever he wore on the show. Well, let's watch this clip.
Oh, boy.
And see what.
Oh boy. Well, kind of looks like cheese.
Like caricature, so it's really good.
Thank you.
Would you like to tell us what's inside it?
Mint and strawberry with a cocoa buttercream.
Did you say a cocaine buttercream?
No. Tooth pasty. The mint is so strong, and it has that very chemical taste.
It's a shame. Let yourself down a little bit on the texture and flavor.
Yeah. Okay.
So this guy, they say nothing about Tom DeLonge in that clip. They're just nor would they care.
Tom DeLonge, is this a friend of yours? You know him from around the way?
Okay. No, and also Noel is there, and hasn't said a word. I bet it almost seems like Noel would have came in and just made fun of him for it. But yeah.
A question for you, James. Is it just called baking show over there?
No, it's actually not. It's called the Great British Bake Off here.
Okay, so it's called basically the same thing here.
Those ears are gross.
So here's like another clip from it. You can see the separation of the weird eyes, the real creepy eyes.
I think Tom DeLonge would love to have those eyes.
Is that fondant? Is that like the waxy like paraffin?
I don't know. Let's see.
Who's this, Prince Charles?
No.
So I just keep guessing.
It's meant to be Tom DeLonge.
Who?
Tom DeLonge. Blink-182.
Oh, I know who they are, yeah.
Are you a fan of that type of music, Noel?
Yeah.
No.
Fondant ears and a highly detailed...
There it is, fondant.
...cap will cover a strawberry, chocolate, and mint homage to Dave's favorite punk icon.
Oh, man.
I do love
Dave's going to cook a bunch of those when that movie comes out. He's going to be catering the event of the premiere.
Oh, yeah, Tom DeLonge cupcakes? Oh, I do like that they committed to the very, very ugly lip ring in the cake as well, too. I wonder what that's made out of.
Yeah.
The drawing of it is somehow more disturbing.
Yeah, it looks like a Garbage Pail Kid.
Because I can't join in on this. I can't make fun of it because I've been on the show and had a nightmare on it. And became a meme because I did so badly on it. So like I can't make fun of that guy's cake.
But that's what people expect when a celebrity comes in and like they're not gonna nail it. It's like when it's a guy that somehow I don't know how he got on the show. Like is that guy somebody? Do you know who that guy is?
Well, I mean the normal.
I think it's Travis Barker. That was Travis Barker.
Right? That was Travis Barker. Yeah.
He had makeup covering his neck tattoos.
Yeah. It's his way of showing how much he misses Tom being in the band. He just makes cake. You go to his home and it's just different foods shaped like Tom DeLonge.
What if the rest of Blink-182 was like, hey, we love what you did. He's not in the band anymore. You wanna do us? They came and hired him to do themselves.
That must be like if you were, Travis or Mark and you happened to catch that episode, a part of you'd be like, come on. Him? Why him?
That's the thing about music sometimes, though. It's like, any band, and we've talked about this before, name a band and you'll be able to find somebody where it's like, that's my band. Those are my guys. And name some band that you're just kind of like, oh, them? What name some just one off band like Three Doors Down? You know, there's people going Three Doors Down doesn't get better in rock music than Three Doors Down.
Yeah.
Or you run into the people that have had favorite their favorite band is one of those bands, but it's been 45 years. Like there's huge Doobie Brother fans. You're like, what excited you and what kept you excited for 45 years? Like there's not even new music anymore.
Yeah.
I think if someone put on Enema of the State and I wasn't expecting it, I think I would have a nice time. It does remind me a lot of my when I was first getting into for want of a better word, alternative music. I was like 13, 14. I loved that album so much, yeah, and associate with like American Pie, which obviously for all sorts of reasons isn't a good film. But when I was a teenager, it was the best film ever. And there's that whole thing. Oh, it was like, it made me feel so excited to be alive, that album. I feel I would still enjoy that album now.
You know, it's a fine album. I didn't listen to it. My whole thing, when that came out, I didn't like it, but also I didn't, if it came on the radio, I didn't turn it off. Mm-hmm. I was like, you know, yeah, it's like, and that's like, that's like, that was my base level of like, you know, a punk that was trying so hard to like not admit that he could just like things. And it was just like, you know, because I remember how conflicted I felt when Are You That Somebody by Aaliyah came out. And I was afraid to tell my friends about how much I liked that song. And it was just because I heard it, if someone had it on their radio in class, and it like wasn't like a rock or a punk or indie or alternative song. And I was just like, huh. And then like the song came on when I was like flipping around the radio with my friends. And I was like, huh, this song sucks. And I just kept on listening to it.
Yeah. I don't know what it's like in your schools, but like in my school, like all the kids who liked really, you know, mainstream stuff, you know, our little group would sneer at them and be like, oh, they're all just following each other's trends, just doing what each other, they're just copying each other and all this. And then like, you know, a good pop song would come on that I love and be like, yeah, I don't like this. Be like all my mates, it's like, oh man, I'm a fraud. We're just the same as them, except we can't figure out how to be that popular.
Yes, so, yeah, that's all it is. It's like, if you can't belong, just destroy the others.
Yeah, create your own thing.
I remember the year that Nirvana broke, and it was like, oh, they're not like all alternative anymore. They're like on MTV and stuff. And then I just walked headstrong into listening to Robin.
that, with the Y?
Yeah.
She was around in 91?
Yeah. And I was just like, this is the greatest song I've ever heard.
Wow.
It's like, yeah, I guess all bets are off.
The something kind of similar happened with and we've talked about this song before, Puddle of Mud's She Hate Me, where it was such a bad band, but it was such a song that I loved that it was just like, all right, I will take the hits for this. People can make fun of me, but I like this song.
All right, you're still taking hits, by the way.
Oh yeah. Right, these were also Sublime fans that I was taking hits from. So everybody's musical talent has changed.
That's one of the best parts of being. I don't believe anyone is like a proper music fan unless they genuinely love something that everyone else hates, and they know it doesn't make them look cool, but they just love the music. If someone doesn't have a single song or album that falls into that category, I'm like, nah, you're a poser. I don't even believe this. You only like stuff that everyone says is cool.
I agree with that. I when I worked at a record store when I was 19 or 20, and it was the stuff that really impressed me was when the music buyer would be like, oh, this is great, and there was no reason for him to say that, like, other than that he loved him. He was the coolest guy in the store, but was like, oh no, I love this.
Yeah, I mean, my friend Graham, who I've been in a bunch of bands with, and like I met him when I was like trying to kind of like really make an effort in my late teens, like I'm gonna be in a band, that's what I'm gonna do. And I met him at this perfect time in my life, and I remember in his car, I got his car one day and he was listening to Huey Lewis. I was like, okay, this guy is not trying to impress me in any way, shape, or form. I like this.
Bluesy Huey.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break with a song, another song from 2016. Friends of the show, AJJ, with their song White Worms. Great song, great album. Here it is. More Jonah Radio when we get back.
Ay, caramba. This is Bart Simpson, dude, and you're listening to Jonah Radio. Make you feel the feeling.
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey, everybody, it's Cash coming at you to talk about Keeps. Well, 2 out of 3 guys will experience hair loss, some form of male pattern baldness by the time they're 35. The best way to prevent hair loss is to do something about it while you still have hair left. Well, now you can get treated from home. You used to have to go to a doctor's office for your hair loss prescription. Now, thanks to Keeps and COVID, you can visit a doctor online and get hair loss medication delivered right to your home. They make it easy and deliver your medication every 3 months so you can say goodbye to pharmacy checkout lines and awkward doctor visits. Keeps offers generic versions of the only 2 FDA-approved hair loss products out there. You may have tried them before, but probably never for this price. Prevention is the key, though. Keeps treatments can take up to 4 to 6 months or more to see results, so it's important to act fast. The sooner you start using Keeps, the more hair you'll save. Find out why Keeps has more 5-star reviews than any of its competitors, and nearly 100,000 men trust Keeps for their hair loss prevention medication. Keeps treatments start at just $10 a month. Plus, for a limited time, you can get your first month free. If you're ready to take action and prevent hair loss, go to keeps.com/radio to receive your first month of treatment for free. That's KEEPS.com/radio. That's KEEPS.com/RAYDIO.
Hello there, this is Morrissey, and you're listening to Jonah Radio, though I don't think it matters.
Unmute. Cash, that was on you. Here I am trying to say our good friend Moz sending in that station ID. Always a pleasure to hear from him. All right, we are still here with James Acaster talking about music from 2016, music news of today, stuff like that. But what about the music of today from yesterday? It is time for This Day in Music.
This Day in Music!
I'm here to help you with your history report.
You guys are going to go back in time. Yeah!
Thank you, Todd Donald, for that intro to This Day in Music.
That's all cool. Right.
Yeah.
Today is October 8th, and this is when I'm recording it, even though you're listening to this on October 9th. So you're going to – Yesterday in Music. That's what we should call the segment, Yesterday in Music. If only – I'm looking for sites that have This Week in Music. Impossible. Impossible.
No, it's only days.
Yeah.
Previous Thursday in Music.
Yes. On this day in 1957, Jerry Lee Lewis recorded Great Balls of Fire.
Wow.
Huh? I wonder how many days after that until he married his 14-year-old cousin. 1971, John Lennon released on this day Imagine.
Well, that's a song.
That's a song, yes.
That is a song.
I didn't say these are interesting. I'm just saying it's a segment.
Oh, they're all great. I mean, what I think of when I think about this kind of stuff. So the day when they recorded it, I'm always like, did they know it was good at the time? When they were in the studio, did they have that feeling of, oh my God, we've just recorded one of the greats? Or were they just like, oh, whatever, and just went home? Also, John Lennon releasing Imagine, it's not the same as when someone releases something now and they can instantly see all the responses to it, and it's like big release day. He would have just released it and gone, well, I'll find out if that went well next week.
Yeah, one day I'll know if it made a dent.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd love to just get impressions of like the second engineer on every recording session. Just like go to him and go like, what do you think? Like you just had to plug in everything for these guys, and they were real bitches about it. What do you think about this song? And it's all right. Or, yeah, it's a hit.
On this day in 1987, three members from ZZ Top, I don't know why they wrote it that way. They could have just said ZZ Top.
Yeah, there's only three members.
Yeah. ZZ Top made advance bookings for seats on the first passenger flight to the moon. That was in 1987. Still no go.
Still waiting. Frank Beard is still twiddling his thumbs.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
In this day in 1966, Cream drummer Ginger Baker collapsed while on stage at Sussex University just after completing his epic 20-minute solo on Toad. Yeah, I don't know if you guys have ever seen a drum solo that goes more than 5 minutes. I think Ginger Baker got what he fucking deserved.
Yeah, more than 1 minute. Like, yeah. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
20 minutes.
Yeah, I know. When I was a kid, I loved that. I got the CD single for Iron Butterflies, Indigata Davida live with the drum solo. And that's on. And that's like, I think, 10 minutes, right?
It's pretty, right. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
And I'm a drummer. Like, I fucking love the drums. But drum solos, no. Drum circles, I'm coming around on.
Ooh, no, you're not. No, come on.
I feel guilty for taking you to a dead show.
I only have so many friends in town. You can't start coming around on drum circles.
I remember the first time I had never heard of them. Oddly enough, they never really seemed to happen in Hawaii, even though it seems like they would have. But when I was working at a record store in Venice Beach. And
right,
then
you worked at a record store in Venice Beach, California. Like, yeah. How did you not know of drum circles?
This is the story of when I found out about
it. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I was there, and then I hear rhythmic drums happening towards the beach, and I was like, oh shit, what's that sound? That sounds cool. And my boss is like, it's a fucking drum circle, dude. It happens every Friday afternoon. And I was like, oh man, just a bunch of people just fucking playing the drums. That sounds awesome. And he's like, go check it out. And then I walked across the street, and then I came back immediately, and I was like, that doesn't look like the kind of people I want to be hanging out with.
That's the problem with it. It sounds cool when you hear it. The idea in general, I like the sound of, and then you see, it's just like, if there was a way of doing a drum circle and you didn't have to see any of the other people in the drum circle, I would have a good time.
I would caveat that with smell too.
Yeah, it's the epitome of I like the band, but I hate their fans kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I love rhythm. I just hate their fans.
And there's like always the guy too. It's like, man, I'm kind of embarrassed. I thought I was the only guy that was going to bring a djembe.
I will say that I do think that there are drum circles in Hawaii. They're just the width of the islands. That you're always in a drum circle. You just never know it because you're on a circular island.
It's the rhythm of the ocean, right? Yeah. On this day, music birthdays, Tony Wilson in 1947, Hot Chocolate, who had the 1975 U.S. number 3 single, You Sexy Thing, and the 1977 U.K. number 1 single, So You Win Again, and over 25 other top 40 hits. His birthday today, 1947. There's two Ramones that have a birthday today, an original, Johnny Ramone, and another one, C.J. Ramone, both have birthdays today. And Teddy Riley, from Blackstreet, who said maybe came up with, was part of the people that constructed the New Jack Swing movement.
Mm-hmm.
And fellow...
Do they call it New Jackson Swing in England? Is it a little more formal?
Yeah, that's exactly what we call it.
Yeah. And it must be the third. It's Jackson Swing the third, because you guys have such a history of swing.
And we spell it the THEE.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And swing has an E at the end.
Yeah.
I love England. The fake one in my mind, not the actual one where you guys live.
Cash, I'm not sure if you realize, but
the fake one in your mind.
James was making fun of you that whole time.
Yep.
finally, birthdays today. Bruno Mars, fellow Hawaiian-born performer, me, him, and The Rock, type, Tia Carrera. big happy family that from Hawaii that got into showbiz together and now don't hear from. That's it for
The Rock chirped you for eating cheese before you went to bed.
He's chirped me a couple times. One time I did like a kind of a rhythmic thing and I said, hey, can I do this music? Can I do the score for the sequel of Jumanji? and like I just kind of like had this like little woodblock thing, and then he retweeted it saying you're signed, and then like
yes.
And then like there was the most attention I'd gotten for anything I've ever done. Like from friends and family going, holy shit. And then
the family of Osama bin Laden is monitoring your tweets now.
Yeah. I always want to ask, it's like Emily Gordon's working. I don't know if that's public knowledge. Maybe I shouldn't. I don't know.
She's working. She is working. Yeah.
Yes, Emily Gordon is working, and she also likes The Rock. Okay, anyway, moving on to
check out the slingshot I made.
Very good slingshot.
It's pretty good.
James, I'm not sure if you picked this up, but Neil's lonely.
Yeah.
So far, a gun and a slingshot.
Yes. And he's changed headwear three times, yeah. I think.
Yes.
No, just twice. I got the cowboy hat on.
This is how, if Neil decided to end it, he would do it. He'd set up the gun facing him, and then he'd shoot the slingshot at the trigger, trying to shoot himself.
Yeah. James, what kind of music did you play when you were...
Good question. My first band I was in, I was 15, and it was a new metal band, but with Joe Satriani style solos.
Oh, shit.
Summer
Song. Great.
Those are my friends. So we did the, you know, I mean, we were all into kind of like new metal kind of, and my friend Matthew Butler was like a ridiculously talented guitarist who didn't do well at school, but like could literally play as good as like Steve Vai and people like that. And never got the encouragement you need. You know, it's like you want to go back in time and shout at the teachers and just be like, that kid could have been somebody. You all told him he was a loser. That was my first band. And then I was in a hardcore punk band called the New Hardcore Skiffle Movement.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Then a post-hardcore band. A post-hardcore band called Free Line Whip, which is a political term we didn't understand. And
also very post-hardcore, like post-hardcore needs like three words in the name sometimes. Yeah, like this engine like, burns.
Yeah, that's what it needed. We were listening at the time to a lot about the driving and stuff like that.
Yeah, of course.
And,
there you go.
Then I was also in a folk funk band called the Capri Sun Quartet. which upon reflection was like the band that like people responded to the most at gigs and liked the most, but it wasn't our proper band. It was like a cool like folk singer in Northampton where I grew up called B, and she just wanted a backing band, and then me and the aforementioned Graham joined that band, and they decided to be dicks and basically play funk stuff over the top of her songs instead of what we were asked to do. But then it actually worked quite well. Oh, no. And it was like a very short-lived little project. And then the band I was in for the most amount of time, I was obsessed with, it was called The Wow Scenario, which is meant to be tongue-in-cheek. It was just me and Graham, and we wore these grey t-shirts with yellow velcroed on ties that we could rip off during the gig if we wanted to. And it was like... We called it experimental jazz pop is how we tried to explain it to people. We were trying to sing like the Beach Boys, even though we couldn't sing, and trying to play like a really like, yeah, kind of jazzy prog kind of band. But what it, and it was
Did
like,
you record with any of these bands? Guitars.
Yeah, with that band, when we decided to split up, we weren't going to like carry on anymore. We did the whole thing of going, well, every band we've been in before, we've never recorded anything. So, and we always get gutted that we don't have those songs anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So... The only person who ever liked us outside of, everyone hated that band, but outside of that band, one guy who had found us on MySpace, who was also a producer who had his own little studio down in the south of England, had contacted and said, if you ever want to record anything, let me know. So we contacted him and going, we're splitting up and we want to record all of our songs, which is 17 songs. And we stayed in his studio for a month. We slept on the floor and we recorded it like we were, you know, I said earlier about bands in the studio thinking we're recording the next great thing. We were like, literally, no one will hear this besides us, but we're recording one of the best albums of all time. And we really focused on it like that. Every waking hour of the day was spent like experimenting with different things. And like, you know, we kind of, I mean, drilling holes in a mannequin's head to put microphones in it and record around that and going to the airport and recording people coming home for Christmas and then like using those samples and all that kind of stuff. And then we just left it. And that was 2007. And the next week I started doing stand-up. Wow. Just went from that. Just
shifting gears.
Way to slam the door behind you.
Yeah. But then a few years ago, I was listening to it again and was like, oh, actually, I love these songs. It's just like we could never sing and our vocals are bad. And I spoke to Graham about it. He's like, yep, I listen to it every now and again and I feel the same way. I was like, how about we contact Chris and we take the vocals off and we replace them with violin and cello and saxophone and clarinet. So we did that and we got a load of musicians in and they played our vocal parts. And then we had this big instrumental album that we are really proud of now, but we missed the vocals. And so now we're going to get some vocalists in to record over the top of these new instrumentals with all those instruments. And once that's done, we will release it. But it will be of a 10 years time or something.
This is going to be like the second Laws album. It's never done. It's just going to keep on.
I feel like that, but like it's a fun kind of like little project to be involved with, I guess.
Yeah. I think it's fun. I was never able to like fully, when I stopped playing music and went into stand up, I missed music the whole time just because stand up is so isolating. And I just I forgot how much I love the collaboration of music. And it's like just like maybe about 5 years ago, I started actively just playing with friends again.
Yeah. Well, when I started doing that, you know, revisiting that old band. So also at the same time, went in the studio and recorded an album that came out in 2016, where I covered a load of old bands who I used to grow up, were local bands who I grew up with, my friends who now aren't musicians, but they all had demos and I really loved those individual tracks. They each had at least one song that I thought was good and everyone needed to hear it.
I've thought about doing that so much of that's such a great idea of like all the like, you know, weird Hawaii punk bands and indie bands that I loved. Like it's like, oh, wouldn't it be neat to just kind of, you know, do that? That's incredible. That's so funny that you did that. Is that available?
Yeah, it's on Bandcamp. It's called Luna.RaidsTheBeePigeon. Dot has two T's. They're all local bands from Kettering, where I grew up in Northampton. And the original singers came back and sang on them. And I formed this little band of musicians for the album. And I realized while doing that what I loved about music was working on the songs and recording them, but I didn't like doing them live, and live performance was the bit I didn't like. I was like, oh, and that is the only bit I retained for my career, was just live stuff. I turned my entire career into the one bit I didn't like in music.
Yeah.
I've done that for over a decade.
Have you like kind of figured out what your favorite 2016 release is?
Very hard. Like every time people ask, I've always said like, there are two albums that I can't really choose between that I feel like they're very personal, but also they've got like a cult following and that's exciting. Yeah, I like things that resonate personally, but also reach, you know, a bunch of different people. So when you go to the gigs, you feel connected like that. So I would say, I always say that it's Telephone by No Name and Worry by Jeff Rosenstock. And those are the two that I will point to a lot that kind of have meant the most to me. Just that, you know, I think that No Name album needs a lot more attention, but still the people who like it, it's one of their favorite hip hop albums. And like, she's got such a unique voice. And that Jeff Rosenstock album, we're talking earlier about Blink-182, which I did like when I was a teenager. And then like, what was nice about the Jeff Rosenstock record was that I was like, oh, all this time I've spent away from current music, pop punk has been growing up with me and evolving and going at my, you know, so it's like not for teenagers anymore. Now it's for people in their 30s.
Yes.
And it's about that life experience. And I just became obsessed with the whole structure of that album, just the sound of it, everything about it. And when I saw him live in London playing that in a very tiny venue, every single person in that room had been obsessed with that album and knew every word to the song and was just shouting it. And it was amazing.
It's a great, great album. And his new album, No Dream, is amazing as well. And
yeah,
we really just had him on the other day and he's such a great guy too.
Yeah, recorded an episode with a bonus episode with him for the podcast as well.
Oh, nice.
Where you talk about the album?
I talk about Worry. Yeah, we just talk about Worry. And we mentioned No Dream because it had just come out. So we mentioned that. And I interviewed him for the book I wrote as well. The book's called Perfect Sound Whatever, which is one of the songs on his album. It's the last song on that album.
Yeah.
He's been very generous with his time. And you guys know he's such a...
That experience, yeah. I think I saw him right around that time. I shot him back when
What was that record label that Christina worked at?
It was Side One Dummy.
Side One Dummy. He was doing. He did a live show at Side One Dummy, and Christina. I didn't know who he was. Christina just called me up, and said, "Hey, you want to bring down your camera and shoot this thing?" And I showed up, and I was like, "Sure." And they're like, "Yeah, we're gonna have like 30 people come in," and like 70 people showed up, and they knew every single word of this guy that I had never heard of. It was one of the most like overwhelming things because I was just supposed to be sitting there working a camera, and then by the end, it was like, "Okay, camera's good. I'm gonna go like fucking dance with these people. This is amazing."
It's funny because I love that Worry is a great album, but when I had to pick my favorite album from 2016, I had to go with the album that Pup put out, which yes. I think is like just incredible. They're one of my favorite bands, but The Dream Is Over is such an incredible. Here's like a little bit of it. We'll play a little bit of everyone's picks on here, but here's it's just so hard and technical and fun and sad.
This is the first. This is Ed Gamble, who does the other pod, my Off Menu podcast with me. This is his favorite album of 2016.
Oh, nice!
And this was the song that he sent me to like get me into the album.
That's great.
Yeah, straight away I was like, oh yeah, this is great.
And when I got to see them, when I got to see them live, like I was like, I wonder if they're going to be able to pull off the like this like, woo! And they did. It's such an incredible live show.
Great. On the tour that I was doing in 2017, when I was like just exhausted and was hating the tour, I started walking on stage to the first track off that Pup album.
If this tour doesn't kill you, I will.
I will. Yeah, yeah. I was like walking onto that.
That's great. Awesome. Cash, you want to go next?
Yeah. Let me grab the sharing screen.
There you go. It was very funny to like look through the list of what came out in 2016 and going, holy shit. Like, yeah, like that Pause album came out. Mm-hmm. Our friend Honus put out a record that year, Level Up, like LVL Up off of us. I think it was Sub Pop. Or
the final album.
Yeah, that was our final album. And I love that guy's next project, Trace Mountains. He went on to do Trace Mountains, which is great. But like Swearin' put out an album that year. Yeah, AJJ, Taco Cat, Summer Cannibals, Frightened Rabbit put out there. With like one of my favorite Frightened Rabbit songs, I Wish I Was Sober. Don't care for the lyrical content on that, though. Makes me feel not good.
A little judged.
Yeah, a little judged.
Tribe Called Quest put out their last album
in 2016. That's right, Anonymous and Nobody. That's right.
That's De La Soul.
No, oh, that, sorry. That's this right. was, yeah. We got it from here. It was and it was after Fife Dog died. Sergio Simpson put out his second album, which is very good. He does an amazing cover of In Bloom on that. Aesop Rock had a good album.
What's your pick? What's your main pick?
My main pick is this was a great album. It really feels like a Parliament album from the 70s. Is the Childish Gambino album.
Yes.
I got that so quick.
Yeah.
You got it off like the vaguely intro stuff. No, but this is such a good album. It really I started listening to this album. The thing is, I didn't go back and listen to early Childish Gambino albums after this. I went back and listened to like Parliament and Funkadelic albums from the 70s. Because it has that feel of just like, it's such a tribute to, I mean, it's such a tribute to that style of album making where it's just kind of a jam and there's all sorts of like different songs on it. He's got that song, that California song that's really poppy. But for the most part, it's just like this really deep, kind of fun.
I think I saw him perform that year in South by Southwest. I think me, Emily, and Kumail like went to some, I don't know, it was fucking like Microsoft party or some dumb thing, and it was a huge band and it was loud and it was just like everybody was into it. It was incredible.
This part right here was the part that I knew that this was kind of a different album because it's like it's got this really subtle intro, just people singing, and then it gets to right here. Is it another four?
Nice.
And
that was a big dirty bass.
Yeah. Oh, you can feel that. And then come on. Drop it.
I know exactly the bit that you need. It's worth waiting for. It's a good bit. The drums going the top.
The fucking evil laugh. Like, nobody's using evil laugh music since like 1978, but it's
so perfect here. And it just tells you.
I think Insane Clown Posse is still using it.
Taking this job. But it's such a, it's, I love that album, and it's such a weird, like, it's not what I expected from basically a comedy writer backpack album, a backpack rapper album, basically, is what I've listened to his earlier stuff. And
having been kind of like, having known him since, like, you know, the stand-up and Derek comedy days, it's crazy to see, and like the entire time he's been, like, ever since I saw the Derek comedy sketch, I think it was Jeffrey Shits His Pants or something, or Jeffrey Puts His Pants. It's like, that's one of my all-time favorite sketches.
Yeah.
You know? And just like from then on, I was like, this guy's great. And he's also like a sweet dude. Just this, like.
I've met everybody else from Derek. I've never actually met him, but everybody else speaks.
Neil, start sharing your stuff.
I got to go on tour with him for like this Funny or Die comedy tour. And best dude.
Yeah, real nice guy.
He told me about how he wears fake glasses when he goes to the mall because white people will leave him alone.
Yeah. Neil, are you getting that? You sharing the audio?
Yeah, I'm sharing now.
It's all working.
Make
sure you share computer audio as well. Neil, remember, every week it's the same process. You go to share, and then go to advanced, and then go to share computer audio.
Yeah,
it's
something like that.
It's not. There's no crazy updates. There's no crazy updates that'll change things. So,
anyway, I chose this album because I love the way it was produced. They it was crowdsourced. They took pre-orders and got a bunch of money up front, and then they just they recorded all the instrumental tracks just like as a gang recording for like 2-3 weeks. Beforehand, and then use them like samples. And this is, as previously mentioned, that De La Soul record and the anonymous Nobody.
Now we can see Neil texting pictures of himself on his
that was just
iMessage there.
I'm not texting anyone. What?
You're not sharing audio, buddy. You're sharing the screen.
Fucking dildos. It's the same sucker.
You work with computers for a fucking living.
Not anymore. I don't.
Go to share screen, and then you got to go to that second page.
If anybody's enjoying that postal service video that came out today, that Neil was the editor of that postal service video.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Whiteboard, iPhone.
Advanced. Share computer audio.
How long it took you to make that video?
Oh, shit.
There we go.
Let me see how many palms go up high if you and I came in right at the fucking bottom. And if you wait beside the side to symbolize needing help in the sample, you under quick. Big mama said the devil's up to no good, but we can heal it on a Sunday with a good book. Or if we kill it on a Monday for a good look. And make it part of the campaign to withstand pain. Me myself place it all on my shoulders and give it my all like heavy lifting. No game without tears and sweat to claim blue skies with white clouds steady drifting. When pain come to get you, it hit you like flow. Better times will pick you. Do what you gotta do. To earn focus in the stormy weather. Come out the tunnel to the light, saying.
This is right. So they basically made their own sample library for this album, is what you were saying.
Yeah, they had the Roots, basically the Roots and a bunch of other players come in.
Right on. Have you covered that album yet there, James?
I haven't covered it yet. No, it's one that, like, I'm obviously aware of it, but haven't fully dove into it. I'm a huge fan. I've got, like, Three Feet High and Rising. Obviously, I'm not made of stone. love it. I saw them live once at a festival on the Isle of Man. So, like, you know, a real isolated little festival. And it was a really sunny day. And I remember... There were two things. One was that one of the singers kept going, "Oh God, it's so sunny," which really made me laugh. Hearing a rapper complain that it's sunny and using the word sunny. And also, one of their mics stopped working, but they didn't know it. And it was during a part when one of them was going like, okay, everyone on this side, make some noise. And then the other guy was trying to get his side to make some noise, but no one could hear him. And also, like, he was kind of the one going first a lot of the time. So he was like trying to say to them, hey, everyone, shout out, you know, like give him a whole sentence to shout out, and no one did it. So then the guy whose mic was working was getting annoyed with that side for not backing his mate up. So was saying to us a lot, hey, you guys, say fuck you to that side. They're not supporting us. And I was like, we were trying to go, no, you don't understand. But also wanted to feel like no one's supporting them. So we were kind of reluctantly going, yeah, fuck you. you guys know the situation, right? There's nothing personal. We just want them to fit the gig.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's actually a lot like our election here. So now you know what it's like. Yeah.
When we asked our listeners what their favorite albums were from 2016, Pup got the most votes. Basement is
nice.
In there. Frank Ocean is in there. Honus is in there. Jeff Rosenstock, Sturgill Simpson. Those were like the most ones.
Shout out to the Sturgill Simpson one. That's one of those albums where, like, I bought that for my mum because I was like, yeah, she would like it. But I like that album as well. But it's like, oh, we can actually connect over this in a way. And it's a really fascinating album how he mixes like country music with like soul and different genres that.
Yeah.
And he's doing a good job of like progressing country music, and he had that whole anime movie that he
which he was scored to his album. That's great.
Which I liked, and then someone ruined it for me by saying, oh, it just sounds like Bon Jovi. And I was like, oh, man, maybe it sounds like Bon Jovi.
Oh, shit, it does.
Because, what's weird was with some genres, it's like if someone goes, if you're kind of starting with a, like, there's loads of bands, there's a band called Virus, who I think are great, and they've split up now, but they started off as like a black metal band, and then they evolved to the point where it was like, you know, it was so far away from black metal, but if you started with them at the beginning, you were like, what they're doing now is amazing. This is like the most original black metal I've ever heard. It's like, yeah, that's because it's indie rock. Oh, I see. Yeah, because I'm starting from here.
Yeah, it's like
it sounds like Panther.
It's like the Beastie Boys are doing some crazy things with hardcore if you listen to their last album.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, that is it for this episode of Jonah Radio. James, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for hanging out.
Of course.
James, before we go, I want to ask you about your boots, because I watched all your specials the other night, and you have amazing boots.
Oh, thank you so much.
Are those bespoke? Are they custom made, or are they...
No, but the shoelaces, this is the most boring, bored.
It's not.
Basically, I was really obsessed with making those specials look a certain way, and I got a mic lead that matched the kind of color scheme of the show. Yeah. And then when I went out, and then my shoelaces for the show snapped like the day before we were filming. I was like, oh no, I haven't got shoelaces in these shoes now. So I went to buy some new ones, walked in a store, and they had shoelaces that matched the mic lead. I was like, I cannot believe this. Wow. And so I bought those shoelaces specifically because they matched the mic lead and wore them just that once. We filmed all the shows, all four of them in one day, and then filmed all four of them again the next day. And then
holy
I never wore those.
Shit.
And then I never wore those again. So
that's incredible. I would never tell anybody to do that.
It was mad. And it was like during that bad year. And I was at that point going through a very bad time with my agent, and I would film one, I'd have half an hour between specials and come off and just have my head in my hands and go on stage and film another one. And I was listening to Worry by Rosenstock all day, both days, and having that on in the green room, which is when I first realized that the lyrics to Perfect Sound, whatever, were about not getting hung up on things being perfect and to let it go. And then I felt a lot better. I was able then walk on stage and put out of my mind trying to nail it and you know, then beating myself up. So thanks to Jeff Rosenstock again, I guess.
Yeah.
That's
he's beautiful. He's a true, you know, fucking punk icon. does a lot of great work, does the punk work of like, you know, like doing benefit shows, keeping things DIY as a way to, you know, jam a Kano. And
also, Jonah, I want to say thanks to you before we finish as well, because you texted me about the podcast and getting into that Bologna Violin Tour album. And that's I don't know about you guys with your music podcast, but pretty much the only reason I want to do a music podcast is to get people into albums that I like that they haven't heard of. Yeah. And that particular episode, I got I think a lot of people got quite angry at it because it was like the heaviest album we'd had on so far. And it was really cool to get someone who texts me and go, this album's great. I was like, yes, okay, good.
Yes. But, yeah, no, yeah. I was really stoked to find that. I mean, I love that podcast. I also love the yours and Ed's. People should check that out because Ed is very, very funny and also so perfectly adept at making you so weird. Like it's such an interesting like gift he has. It's like where you found this like perfect, like, because he's still funny, but he's a great straight man for like that, like pushes you into an odd position to like just be as weird and tangential as you want.
He is, he's the best. And there's a Jeff Rosenstock episode of that coming up as well.
Hey, nice.
So, real quick before we wrap up, you want to run it because you have so many projects. You have several podcasts going. You want to run us down? You want to do some quick plugs for us?
Sure. There's the Off Menu podcast of Ed Gamble, all about food. We ask guests their dream meal, course by course. There's Perfect Sound, James Acaster's Perfect Sounds, which is on BBC Sounds, which is the music podcast. A shorter podcast than the Off Menu one. A different album every week. There's the Netflix specials called Repertoire. As well, there's a book called Perfect Sound Whatever about the music of 2016, a book called Classic Scrapes about just funny little stories from my life. And
you know what, real quick, James, pitch that last one again. Judge it less when you pitch that last.
I'm immensely proud of it. Classic Scrapes by James Acaster. Hey, it's my life story. all the tales are told of some cheeky wit and a little bit of a wink.
Yeah, just my life growing up as a skater kid in San Diego.
Soon to be a feature film from Tom DeLonge.
Yeah. As a kid growing up on the outskirts of Kettering, Northamptonshire, and what a crazy life I had, going to school, being liked by some kids and not by others, and being able to move on and get a career for myself with actually very little struggle.
Yeah. Oh, you also did, I found it on YouTube, but you did a kind of a travel thing where you went back to your hometown.
Oh, yeah. I forget about that, and I'm so proud of that. Sweet Home Ketteringa, it's called, and we did a sequel where we did a travel log of Kettering's twin town, Lahnstein in Germany, called Sweet Home Lahnsteineringa as well. Nice. And the Lahnstein one especially, I had such an amazing time. Me and the crew were all kind of doing, it was a documentary about Lahnstein, but also playing characters and improvising a storyline throughout it as well. And it was one of the most fun weeks I've had, like filming anything. And it was just, and that was, you say about crowdfunded stuff. That was the first experience I had with crowdfunded. So, me and Dale, I think we did that in 2016 actually as well. So,
yeah, that's the funny part about that is like, I think I had heard you were doing that, but I was in the middle of doing Hidden America, which was also like fake travelogue where traveling around and having, characters and having it all written with a story. And I was like, fuck, now, like, it was just that conscious effort of like, well, I can't watch that for a while.
Yeah.
And watch that thing that's going to be similar.
Oh, yeah. I've only just started watching stand up specials again during this year. I've been watching for ages, but now I'm like, well, I'm unlikely I'm going to write a show for a while. So I'll finally catch up on Kid Gorgeous.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
It's like a horse in a hospital.
Yeah.
When it comes to the album, Luna Dot Raids the Bee Pigeon, which song would you like us to go out on?
Can we play If, please?
Sure thing. This is If by Luna Dot Raids the Bee Pigeon from 2016 in our 2016 themed show. We themed a show after a year. Remember 2016 when it got real sad for everyone and only continued to get worse and will only get worse?
I remember it was the last year I had a job I liked.
All right, here's If.
Check out the Postal Service video.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Check out my Postal Service video. It's online.
Here you go. Thank you. God damn, that was great.